youth are the capacitors that will never exceed the transient peak voltage. In order for the spark to jump, we gotta have to exceed that condition. Why in the world we're doing that, knowing that it's gonna be 2,000 hours of the capacitor life? I have devices that are 30 years old. I have devices that are a few months old, and they work good. And next year,
I had a question.
Yeah. There's no easy one on this one. First of all, total energy stored is 1/2 CV². Double the spacing between the plates. Yes, you can put close to twice the amount of voltage for the same amount of light, but you're going to have half the capacity. The reason we don't make these all capacitors of much higher voltage than we need is because you must increase the volume. And Glenn is being hammered by his mechanical engineers every single day. Hey, you and your conservativeness, your belt and suspenders philosophy of making these 15-volt circuits have 35-volt capacitors, that makes the volume much bigger, and we ain't got that volume. You're already line on line. You can't do that. For a quick comment on that one, Glenn, would you agree or disagree? And we've got to move on. KCQQIQ, we're going to come back to this. Joe has asked an extremely good question. We haven't covered it all yet. We just scratched the surface on this one. KCQQIQ, KQRIW.
Hey, Drew. Yes, actually, you've come to the dark side of my job where, you know, I've got electrical engineers, I've got mechanical engineers working for me, and then, of course, I've got management. And management tells me cheap. You got to keep that bill of material as low as you possibly can. The mechanical guys, we've got an envelope that we've got to stay within. We've got the electrical guys just trying to make things last as long as possible and make all the circuits work and get all the functions in there. They got to meet all the specs. So it's not an easy life. And you're right. Sometimes there's always a trade-off in design. You know, you're trying to balance all ends. You can't make it too expensive. If it's too expensive, no one's going to buy it. If you make it last too long, nobody will buy any more, and management gets all over your case. If it lasts too short, you get a lot of returns coming back. So it's all a happy balance. Back to you, Dick. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
KC2YD3. Dick, also add me to the list of questions, please.
You're on the list. You forgot to mention the ILIDI people, the reliability, the maintainability people. You've got to keep them happy. The reliability department is saying that, we are guaranteeing this circuit is going to last X number of hours, otherwise they're going to be sending it back to us and we have to do a free repair.
That was the warranty people, Dick.
Okay. I'm going to break my own rules here. I said I'm going to move on. There's one particular person here I want to hear from, and that's Eric, KE2EJ, the chief engineer of Channel 13 and Channel 21, the PBS people. When it comes to the broadcast world, they've got to guarantee ridiculous numbers of thousands of hours of mean time between failure and reliability. So the power supplies used there, it's not consumer, it's not commercial, it's not military. In some cases, it's beyond military. Eric, how do you solve this one? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Yeah, I've been listening to this for a little while, Dick, and one thing I got to say is I suspect that Ben is, you know, he's talking about 5 millimeter capacity. We're talking circuits now here. It's a whole different world from where we used to be, say, 10, 15 years ago. Even as surface mount was coming in, power supplies, we tended to use big parts. So, we're talking about shrinking things down really tiny. In the broadcast world, things we shrink down, we use tail and capacitors, we don't use them in power supplies. We use them in the signaling circuits and analog circuits and that kind of stuff. Where the power factor is like humongous compared to the signal that's passing through it. And we talk about power supplies, we're talking about components that are maybe 4 or 6 times their rating, that you actually need in the circuit. That damn thing's got to run at least 100 to 200,000 hours before failure. And actually, the way many of the things are put together, they just don't fail. You know, I've got stuff that's running 250,000 hours, and that's a lot of years of continuous use. So, it's all about size, Dick, and also materials. K2RWKETJ.
I've got to do a quick pick. 200,000 hours. Wow. Is that in a minute? 200 exponential 3. So he's talking about day in and day out, 50% reliability at 22.8 years. I told you these broadcast people are way beyond mil spec. We've got to move on, and we're going to come back to this, fellas. We've just barely scratched the surface on this. This is a whole the dark side of electronics that none of us has heard about and has been kept a secret from us all this time. Dave, KC2, Zebra, Quebec, Juliet. Sorry to keep you waiting. Go ahead with your question. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, hi, Dick. It's Dave, KC2ZQJ. I actually have to move on to another project right now, and I'm enjoying listening to this topic, so I'll defer my question another night and continue on. Thank you much.
Okay, Dave, you signed in. We didn't get to you. Remind us next week when you sign in again, you go to the top of the list, no matter when you sign in. You're number one on the runway because you've paid your dues and you haven't gotten your just dessert yet, if you know what I mean. Time to go over to the mailbag, Mel. And if you're ready for the mailbag, it's your choice. Go right ahead. And what kind of burning questions hopefully we've gotten this week? K2KEY. I'm glad to hear the good news. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, this is K2KEY. Hold on. Okay. I have to skip it this week. As I said, I've had quite a week. And it just wasn't really on my mind anything else, Dick, Haley. Basically almost bedridden for a while there. Over.
Okay. You and I are going to talk. And as you can tell, Mel is going through a rather complicated episode right now, and as such, we're not going to stress him. Not to worry, Mel. Take another week off if need be, and maybe I should try to pick up some of the load with reference to your mailbag. The next thing that we promised is that Paul's going to give us a report on what's going on in space. I'm pretty sure that we've heard that the three of the astronauts / cosmonauts of the six that were on the International Space Station had to come down for safety reasons, for two reasons, if I understand correctly. One, the Progress spaceship that was supposed to bring up thousands of pounds of consumables failed on launch. I guess it's second or third stage, didn't properly ignite and burn for the right time, and as such, all of that material that should be on the International Space Station is not there. It's going to be a time before they can replace that and make another launch. So they're running out of stuff to sustain the six people, therefore, and you've got about three more about to come up real soon. So for a whole bunch of reasons, they brought them back down. And I think the Soyuz lifeboat, there's two of them there, they have a finite life, and I guess you've got to worry about how close they're coming to that life. And I don't think they've got the ability to put three of those lifeboats there simultaneously. So give us some of these details. And if you happen to know anything about the new planets being discovered, or you want to defer that to next week, that's all your choice, Paul. WS2N, our space expert, K2RIW. Go ahead, Paul.
This is WS2N. Yeah, as far as the Exposition 28 crew, that's what they call them in Russia, they did come back successfully, and I have three people on board, and then another three will go up in November. So, you know, yeah, there was talk about maybe abandoning the space station for a while after the failure of that Progress, Progress 41, I think it was, but the third stage fail. They looked into it. NASA got involved with the Russians. We fly our people on board that and return them as well on their Soyuz craft. Progress cargo ships and the Soyuz craft are launched by the same rocket. So the third stage, it's a manufacturing problem on board. It has the heater that doesn't shut off or something. They've managed to locate it the problem. All the rumors and worry about it apparently is the North. They should have it fixed. Let me drop it. They're presently planning to send the other three up there. If there was still a problem, they would have waited, eventually brought the other three down, and then the station would have been put in automatic control, actually controlled by the robot as well. The Dextra is on the outside of the spacecraft. They could have done repairs with the robot with nobody on board. But that's all. From what I see, not necessary. Capability is there, but it's not going to happen, I don't think. Wanted to bring that up. And the main thing I wanted to bring up is last week they announced, the NASA administrator, Charles Bolden, announced that they have designed and ready to go on a new rocket for the Space Launch System. Now, this thing is big. It's going to launch people in the future, as well as equipment and habitats for long journeys. I mean, possibly to asteroids and eventually to Mars. This rocket is big. They call it the space, SLS, Space Launch System. It's bigger, way bigger than the shuttle. If you just stand the shuttle up on a launch pad, it's over twice the size of the space shuttle. With the external tank and the solid booster rockets that are attached to it, it's over twice that size. In fact, it's bigger than the Saturn V. You got to remember, Saturn V was over a football field long. This is about 40 feet longer than that. Has a 20% more lift capacity than the Saturn V. So this thing will probably, from what I see, both Democrats and Republicans, it looks like they have enough votes in the Congress to get this to go through. So the first launch should be around 2017. Unmanned launch at first, and eventually it will launch the Orion spacecraft. They call it the Orion Multi-Purpose Crew Vehicle, which would carry up to six people. And one of the purposes of this craft would be also, in case we wanted to, bring people to the space station or bring them back. We drop it. So this is WS2N. So if you go to the NASA site, they have an animation of what the thing would look like when it takes off. It's pretty cool. They've got reusable solid booster rockets, similar to what the shell had. Those were reusable rockets. The tank, first and second stage, no, that's not reusable, but the solids are. And, of course, the multi-purpose crew vehicle is as well, probably up to about 10 different kinds. Unlike the Apollo spacecraft, when that would go up and they would bring it to the moon, or they would come back from Skylab, those were not reusable, but the Orion system will be. But it should cut costs quite a bit. So I wanted to bring that up, as well as the talk of this satellite that's supposed to be coming back, that's been up there for a lot of years. It's going to eventually burn up at the end of the month, or maybe the beginning of October. Drop it. And it's called the URAS, U-A-R-S. It's the Upper Atmosphere Research Satellite, sent up by Discovery back in the early 1990s. And been flying around for like 20 years. Ran out of fuel maybe 5-6 years ago. Eventually, what they planned on doing was setting it up, let it deorbit over the Pacific. It is on a 51-degree inclination, which covers all living people down below on Earth. The chances of hitting somebody is, in fact, they gave the odds of actually hitting somebody somewhere would be 1 in 3,000. The odds are against it actually hitting someone, but they don't know where it's going to come down, and the big thing weighs about equivalent of like 3 cars. I think it's like 6 tons. And it was set up there, like I said, about 20 years ago. Actually, I think it's about 12,000 pounds. It looks like about, say a small car weighs 2,000-3,000 pounds. So yeah, maybe 4 cars. So, here's the thing, a lot of it will burn up, but a lot of it will make it to the ground, similar to what happened with Skylab. And of course, unfortunately, the space shuttle was deorbited Columbia. So, they're my main topics. As far as the new planet goes, we dropped read a little bit about it, but Wesley brought it up, so maybe you want, you know, I'd like to defer that over to him. I didn't have a chance to review that. I know there's so many of them that discovering it, but maybe if he's into SJN is on, he could give you a rough idea what he read about it. Just wanted to mention the James Webb Space Telescope. A while back, they were still talking about this thing possibly being canceled. I mean, they're not slowing down the work on this thing. The mirrors are still being worked on. In fact, the last mirror was just completed. They've been working on these mirrors for like, I don't know, almost 10 years. I mean, actually designing and building them. So, the final segment of that mirror is going to be 21-foot diameter thing. It's probably about 18 different hexagonal shapes, and the final one was just finished off and coated, and they're getting ready to test them and all of that. So that thing's still in development. Still haven't heard anything about canceling the James Webb, not officially anyway. So back to you there, Dick. This is WS2N, and it's quite a bit, but what are you going to do? There's a lot of things going on with the space program now. Back to you, Dick.
Make sure I'm waiting long enough. Lots of good information there, Paul. Thank you. I believe, I'm forgetful now, is it Kepler, the one that's looking at 100,000 stars or more than 100,000 stars, continuously staring at those stars, waiting for planets to cross in front of them, making very precise measurements of the spectral signature, the wave shape of the light versus time when a planet crosses in front of those stars. Gives you a lot of information about what's on the planet, how big, how far is its orbit, and so on. So I think Kepler is just starting to really get rolling with this project to look for exoplanets, if I got the right name, Kepler. Also, tell me one more time, James Webb, if it goes through as planned, I believe primarily infrared, going to go to the Lagrange point, roughly a million miles beyond the Earth. And I've forgotten the diameter of that mirror. And let's compare it. And in an extremely desirable location as far as being shielded by the Earth and not having to go behind the Earth on every single orbit like a Hubble Space Telescope does. So a couple more words on any of those. I'd like to hear Paul. WS2N, KQRYW in the TechNet.
Yeah, I always like the descriptions. You get these books and they'll show you, you know, what the diameter of the Hubble looks like compared to a man standing next to it, you know. Definitely big, taller than me, you know, I'm 6'2", so I think it's around 8 feet, the Hubble diameter. And the James Webb, I just read, reading about the mirrors, that's a little over 21 feet in diameter. And, it will go to Lagrange Point 2. It's very cold out there. And that's why the mirrors are really built out of beryllium, the base of it, which is tinted with gold. Mine very microscopic tint of gold for the reflection capability. The beryllium is used because when you're out in super cold, deep space like that, you know, near absolute zero, beryllium is very brittle, strong or rigid. It won't.
I remember last week you were talking about that. You didn't know how to put the heat on. I thought you were making it up. Richie Rich?
Well, was I real noisy? Hey, look at that. It's the Loofering Hospital.
The Loofering Institute of Technology? I put that sign up.
The one up on the roof there, the